While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to Eagle FM. I am your host, Dafa Happy Juju, and this is On the Reading News Analysis. It is Wednesday. Pardon me, no. It is Friday, the 30th of January, 2025. And of course, we're coming close to the end of January already. Before you know it, we're talking about New Year for 2027. That's how the year goes by so quickly and so fast. Now, as the nation continues through the week, public attention remains focused on how decisions are taken today are shaping economic stability, service delivery, and overall quality of life. Across government, our business, and communities, questions of accountability, performance, and long-term planning continue to define the national conversation. Now, key issues such as economic resilience, infrastructure reliability, food and water security, public safety, and community well-being remain at the forefront, influencing both public confidence and policy direction. Now, On the Reading News Analysis provides the space to examine these developments with clarity and context. Here we go beyond the headlines to assess national and regional events, their implications, and their relevance to everyday life in Namibia. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday, we deliver credible journalism, informed perspectives, and balanced analysis grounded in facts and lived realities. Now, on today's program, we focus on the developments shaping the day. And look at public service delivery, evolving agricultural and water concerns, matters of the community safety. You can also tune in on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for updates and audience engagement. This is On the Reading News Analysis. Let's begin with today's top stories. The Ministry of Information and Communication Technology conducts information sharing session at Putuavanga Secondary School and Chatendruka Combined School in the Konene region during a walk-in visit today to the area. Now, the sessions focused on cybersecurity awareness and the National Symbols Campaign, targeting both learners and teachers. Participants, received education on the hygiene use of online platforms, practical tips and guidelines for safe navigation of cyberspace, and awareness on the ethical use of social media. The program also reinforced the importance and meaning of Namibia's national symbols. MICT says the outreach forms part of its ongoing efforts to promote digital safety, responsible online behavior, and national pride among the young people. The ministry is also hosting a high-level stakeholder engagement and cybersecurity awareness session that is, of course, in the Puo Konene region, underscoring the growing importance of cybersecurity in governance, economic stability, and national development, with which also the minister spoke about a tower that was recently erected in the Konene region. Let's take a listen at the Minister of ICT, MICT, that is Information and Communication Technology, Emma Teofilos.
Thank you very much. It's indeed a great honor and pleasure to be here in Ehomba, a constituency in the mighty Konene region. For the launch of this pivotal and important infrastructure that is meant to add value to the residents and the entire community of Ehomba. Under the Universal Service Fund that is duly being administered by the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, we at the MICT see this type of launches as an integral part of implementing a long-awaited initiative under the Communications Act. It took us basically 10 years to get to this point, to ensure that we have funds to put up infrastructure and advanced technology in communities otherwise would not necessarily been able to get the necessary infrastructure due to many, many, many competing interests. But because of that fund, because of our partners and stakeholders, we are able to ensure that the community of Ehomba is able to see this network tower and bring the necessary change to a community and the surrounding areas to gain access to essential digital tools that support livelihoods, that supports learning, that supports entrepreneurship, and of course, safety. This network tower is not one that is in the air. It's a network tower that you can see, that you can touch, and that makes a difference in the way we communicate as a community. I would like to sincerely acknowledge and thank the Ehomba community for its cooperation, its leadership, and a strong sense of unity throughout the process of erecting this tower. I just realized I forgot to recognize my sister, the Minister of Health, Dr. Lubin Dao, who is very, very important here this morning, and I'll touch on that matter a bit later. So welcome again, Honorable Minister. Ladies and gentlemen, meaningful and lasting development is achieved when communities are not merely recipients of support, but active partners who embrace, care for, and sustain the progress made together. Honorable Governor, you spoke about how it's important that the work coming from and the determination coming from our president is cascaded down to the community level. This tower is testament of marching orders from the head of state, Her Excellency the President, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, the guidance of the leadership of the cabinet and the entire government of the Republic of Namibia, who is represented here by the Ministry of ICT and administered through this fund of the USF through CRAN, and of course our partners being MTC, who made it possible that you can see and feel and touch the network tower that we have today. We don't plan in isolation. This government is guided. This government is guided by policy, by documentation, by commitments made. Starting from the commitments made by our president through the Swapo Party Manifesto Implementation Plan, which was forming part and made part of our National Development Plan 6, to ensure that every single dollar that is spent in this government is meant towards the advancement and the progression of our communities. So all these efforts, Honorable Councillor, are then made sure that we make your work a bit easier. You are here 24/7 in Epupa constituency, working with your community, communicating with us at central government around the issues that need attention through the Office of the Regional Governor. So I'd like to thank you and your community for accepting us to be here to bring this infrastructure for the benefit of the people of Ehomba. I now want to take this opportunity to indicate that as we launch this tower today, the School of Ehomba, which has been here for a while, will finally have the connectivity it deserves. And the children in that school and the surrounding areas who have access to free Wi-Fi uncapped for 7 full years. As per the investment of the Universal Service Fund, e-learning, and I could see the young people that were singing here, the learners that were singing here, their potential has no bounds.
Win less and get more with budget beaters at WB. Get a 2-liter Rietfontein juice for only $36.99. 5 kg nice rice for just $87.99. 4 kg Kadila chicken portions for $189.99.
and 2 kg sunlight hand wash powder for only 57.99. See more month-end specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Responsible use of the internet. I'm sure that the amount of information they can access, the amount of ideas that will come from that access will be plentiful to enrich their learning journey. And I can see already that there is a leadership in the young people that we're performing here. I encourage you, the choir that was here, that in the future, one of you has to become the governor of Kunene region. Is that not possible? It's possible. The future is here and it is now. The governor supports that. So definitely this tower, which I believe is 4G enabled, will ensure that the quality connectivity that is offered to the school with free Wi-Fi access, and it's not only the school that benefits, anybody from the community will access that Wi-Fi because it's public Wi-Fi stationed at the institution of government, being a government school, to ensure that the community has access. So the next thing, Honorable Governor, Honorable Councillor, is the clinic. And the minister being here, the Minister of Health, and the Director of Health of the Kunene region being here, they have cleared all the plans necessary to ensure that a clinic comes to Ehomba. And now I ask the community, Honorable Regional Councillor, Honorable Governor, make the work easier for the Minister of Health. Make the work easier for the Director of Health in Kunene region. Identify a place in this area where this clinic is to be built. Once you identify the place, it will take no time for the contractor to be found, and for you to get the services you deserve as a community, the health services that you deserve as a Ehomba community, to ensure that you don't travel kilometers to the nearest clinic. I understand the nearest clinic from here is about 40 kilometers, isn't it? But you want it here, closer to you as a community. So I ask for your leadership, Honorable Governor. I ask for your leadership, Honorable Councillor. I ask the leadership of our chiefs who keep our communities together to identify that wonderful place where our clinic can be built and our children, our elders can be taken care of by nurses and doctors as soon as the clinic is up and running. The good news is as well that as soon as the clinic is up, fully furnished, we will make sure that from the Universal Service Fund, the clinic will also have free access to Wi-Fi for 7 full years. So the sooner the better. The sooner the better for this clinic to be up. And knowing your cooperation, your working together, the wonderful reception the teams had in building this tower, I know for sure that this clinic will be identified, the place for this clinic will be identified, and it will be built for the benefit of the community and the wonderful people of Ehomba. Ladies and gentlemen, as I conclude, through the Universal Service Fund, we also make sure that this network tower means nothing without the enabling tools.
And there you had it from Emma Teofilus speaking about the tower and also about connectivity in the Maheke region. I think the Maheke region is going to post itself in the very near future as a regional hub for thriving businesses, because I do see quite a lot that is going on in Maheke, and I'm not sure, perhaps we need to give applaud also to the governor himself on what he's doing in Maheke region. But nonetheless, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We're back to continue right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetera oipindi konu honda doili nawa nyune udo otukwetera o special angeta shake ngejepa omarude dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And of course, we are back. You are still tuned into On the Reader News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. Now, we're talking about the importance of cybersecurity to governance and why governance, obviously, governance needs to take such engagements of cybersecurity awareness and cybersecurity education quite serious and significant. Now, joining me in studio now telephonically is Douglas Mashonganyika. A very good afternoon to you, Douglas. And Douglas is a software developer who has even gone on to develop a Medago app that has to do with brain tumor identification. Is that correct, Douglas? A very good afternoon to you.
Yes, that is correct. Good afternoon, Happy. How are you?
I'm all good. A long time no engage on this platform.
Yeah, it has been a while.
Mm. Douglas, how have you been doing? Obviously, you are a software developer, and considering that software is the next big thing now in the world. Before we even get into our discussion, tell us recent discoveries or recent things that have happening in terms of software development.
It actually has to do with cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a lot of cybersecurity attacks with one technology that a lot of software developers would know called React. So there was a vulnerability that was found, and this affected a certain version that was widely used by a lot of software developers, including myself. Luckily, the team behind the technology were able to patch it and encouraged everyone to update their version. So if there's anyone listening, making use of React, that is not on the latest version, please update. Some other issue happened where a WordPress plugin, that is, a certain tool that you can use to develop websites.
Mm.
Someone who developed a plugin, or the company that developed the plugin, there was an employee that left the backdoor in the plugin. I forgot the name of the plugin, but it has to do with online shopping. And this employee left this backdoor because they knew they were about to lose their job. So, when they left, they went on to attack every person's website that used that plugin. So I also urge that you check the trust and the trustworthiness, the legitimacy of every plugin or any type of software you download, because it will affect the security of what you're offering.
Interesting. Now, I'm not somebody who's really IT computer related stuff, and I must admit that I don't like it when a computer even freezes or whatever. I don't have the patience for that. Yeah. We need people like you to actually execute those things. You understand? Not everybody can be an engineer, a software developer, all that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, Douglas, why is it very important for government, to secure reliable and transparent systems in order to actually or to build systems that are really strong for their security? We're talking about cybersecurity. And why is this very important?
Well, the importance is not just in the governance, but also enforcing the laws. We do have the governance for it. It's something that I learned, that we do have really good policies when it comes to cybersecurity and IT. That is the only problem, is that it's not being enforced. And the reason it has to be enforced, to answer your question, why it is important to enforce that, is to protect the people who not only work in government institutions, mm-hmm. but people who work in private institutions as well. If a certain leak of data happens within one company, millions of people are affected. For example, in a bank, not only is the bank in trouble, but basically everyone who has interacted with whatever the bank had to offer, whether they went to the website or they own a bank account, it affects a lot of people. Another issue, or another reason it's important, is to encourage foreign investment. One thing that you may have noticed is that there is a lack of foreign investment when it comes to software in Namibia. You don't see big companies such as Google, Microsoft opening any type of data centers here, because they know that cybersecurity isn't really enforced within Namibia. So if they were ever to get into a situation where they were hacked, there wouldn't be much consequences for the people that are responsible, or any type of protection from the law. Even though the law does have policies, we do have that on paper. Problem is that it's not enforced, and this discourages investments from people outside, or people in countries where cybersecurity is enforced. Yeah.
Interesting. Who then do you think, of course, I know that the government is responsible for that enforcement, but then who then do you think should really help government in holding their hand in actually helping to implement this enforcement? Because as much as we sometimes look at the people who are heading these institutions, of course the policies are there, yes, perhaps they've been reformed even for that matter, but then Douglas, who do you say, because I'm looking at it from the lenses of the people who understand this would be best to even help government to enforce such policies.
Oh, so the question is, what would help them?
No, who?
Oh, who?
now include what as well.
Okay. Well, when it comes to the government, the people at the top, the people that are in charge of the different processes within the government, are the best people to, you know, to help with that. And best way to do that is to involve people that are experienced in cybersecurity in governance, and not just lawmakers. No insult to people that aren't in IT, but when it comes to cybersecurity, we do require people that not just studied it, but have had experience with cybersecurity, have had experience in these situations, so that they know the nuances and what actually happens on the ground. Because if we have people that just have a faint idea of how cybersecurity works, or how people hack things, we will be in trouble, because they won't know how to enforce things that are required. Yes. They won't know how to educate people within government agencies about how to protect themselves from, you know, different attacks, etc. Yeah. So the best, or my answer to that would be to get people that are involved in cybersecurity actively,
correct,
get them involved in the government, in the governance. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in terms of such engagements, how often do you think is necessary to actually have them for government and for companies themselves? You know, of course, we talk about matters like this, about protection of information. And of course, this can also save lots of money from, can save a company lots of money, save government lots of money. But how do we then perhaps go about it? How often maybe should the engagements or the education on cybersecurity awareness be done?
Very frequently. And not just engagements, but more of education at grassroots level. We understand most people that already understand how cybersecurity works and how to protect themselves, we tend to continue talking to them about it instead of going to the people that actually don't really have much of an idea. So these types of engagements should happen in an accessible way where people who don't have access to, internet or something like a face-to-face engagement where people come to schools or come to workplaces to educate people on basic cybersecurity, because it starts from that point. If a person knows how to protect themselves, no matter how hard a hacker might try to attack them, if they know how to protect themselves, then they'll be safe. But if a person doesn't know or is not aware of, the newest vulnerabilities or the newest ways to protect themselves, a lot of people are not aware that when they see an email, it might not always be a legitimate email.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that may not know that a phone call may not be an actual legitimate phone call. These are the type of people that need to be engaged with or educated, not just people that are already in this space. Yeah.
Interesting. Do you think we can use cybersecurity to combat corruption? Especially in government, and how could we go about that?
Well, that is possible, and I think we do have some of these in place, although they might not be as perfect. Things like fraud detection, they can see patterns in the movement of money from account to account. These can be a red flag or show us or let us know that something weird is going on. A lot of cybersecurity measures we can take to find out if something fishy is happening. And I think technology is the best way to find these spots. It's very hard to hide money when money is being transferred electronically. There's always going to be a trace. And if we follow that trace, then we'll be able to stop any other type of activity that is similar. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And is that also similar to holding them accountable through what you're describing now? Is that also a way of measure of accountability, or is there something that also can help? And also, while we are at this, Douglas, something that the Minister of ICT has said, I think it was last year, which has really stuck with me, because I think, of course, I look at it like something that is very possible and attainable, but then it will need obviously people who understand software engineering, who understand all those things to actually execute it. She spoke about systems, government forming systems that actually speak to each other, in a system where if I go to the Ministry of ICT now and I have to exercise something, okay, we hardly engage in that ministry anyway, like I'm speaking generally for public, but then let's say one has to go to the Ministry of Home Affairs, and then they have to go to the Ministry of Justice, and a system where the workers or the employees at the Ministry of Health will be able to see the same documents or the updating that the Ministry of Home Affairs made on my profile, that the Ministry of Justice later can also be able to follow up, and the Ministry of Health be able to follow up. How do you think that is something that is possible and attainable in the next few years, perhaps, or even immediately? Is that something that can easily be crafted, where systems actually do speak to each other and making work easier?
Yeah, it is very possible. Systems do work with each other. That does exist. It just doesn't exist in the government as extensively. We do have things called APIs, which basically allow one system to talk to another system.
Okay.
And these are things that can be applied within the different government agencies and applications. It is something that is not only important for cybersecurity, but also for convenience. Because what we have, even within the same branch of the government or the same ministry,
mm-hmm.
we still have fragmented systems.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to go to one part of Home Affairs to get something,
yeah,
and another part of Home Affairs to get the other thing, and it's all not integrated. The best way to actually get to that point is to develop these systems within the country. That's one thing that I did notice, is that a lot of these systems are built outside.
Mm.
And since they're built outside, they're built by different vendors who all don't know each other. They don't know that. Okay, for example, one vendor is building a system for the Ministry of ICT.
Yeah.
Then another vendor in another country is developing a system for the Ministry of Health. They don't know each other. Mm. They don't talk to each other.
Mm.
And it becomes very hard to integrate. But if everything was done centrally in Namibia, then the integration becomes easier, becomes possible, because we know what each system does deeply, because we did it. Yes.
Mm, that's quite interesting. I certainly am one of those people who look forward to finally that dream being actualized. Yeah. I'm one of the people who are really looking forward to seeing that. Now, of course, talking about cybersecurity awareness at national and regional level, of course, also helps saving money and preventing data loss, also protecting institutions and building resilient for companies or for institutions. But what then do we also as individuals can do to help contribute to securing of data? You know, I know CRAN is doing what they're doing in their capacity, but then what do then individuals, what, how can individuals also keep themselves safe, and also companies themselves keep themselves safe? Because we are living in a digital world where somebody is very highly educated, and then their education will now mean they come and hack your system, which then will cost you an arm and a leg in the future.
Yeah. So when it comes to safety, personal safety, I always recommend that people enable two-factor authentication on their accounts. That's the most simple way to secure what you have. That's important, because even though you may have a strong password, people can crack it. People have strong algorithms that can, you know, brute force passwords. And so once someone has your password and you don't have two-factor authentication enabled, then it's over. They can get into your account. They can use that to, you know, talk to other people that are within your circle and, you know, try to get money from them, whatever the goal is. So the first one, two-factor authentication. There's always whatever service you're using, you can go to the settings and there would be an option to enable that. You can enable that with SMS, so that whenever you try to log in, you get a text from your phone, and then you have to put in that text to get into your account. That way, mm-hmm. that way, if someone has your password, they won't be able to get in because your code came to your phone. They wouldn't have access to it. And then on that note,
yeah,
do not share any codes that you receive for two-factor authentication. So there are scams that happen where a person would call you. They already have your password, and then they would ask you for a code on your phone. Don't share any type of codes that you have on your phone. That's the second thing.
Mm.
And another random one, which might sound simple, sounds silly, but it's something that people actually do right now. It's called shoulder surfing. So shoulder surfing is when somebody just comes close to you while you're on your phone or on your device, and this could be at a point where you're putting in a password, something important, and then they can, you know, read from what you're doing on your phone because they're close. One thing you can do to protect yourself is use no, privacy screen protectors. Those things are actually very, very effective.
Oh.
A person will not be able to see what's on your phone unless they're directly in front of it. So if you can get privacy screen protector for your phone, please do. I'm not sure if they make for laptops, but that, if they do,
yeah,
get that as well. Yeah. This also happens. Yes.
Nothing really significant. I just wanted to say the reason why I feel like I can't get a privacy How do you say it again?
Privacy screen protector.
Privacy screen protector is because my kids share the phone. So the moment I get one, they won't really be able to see it together.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, there is a new update, not even an update, but it's the new phones. I think the Galaxy S27, that is, or S26, that's coming out this year, they have that built in. So you don't have to buy a screen protector. The phone automatically blocks certain elements that it believes are sensitive from being seen by anyone else around you. And yeah, that's a cool thing. But of course, it's going to be expensive.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Another form of shoulder surfing is when you're putting in your PIN in a speed point at the, or at the bank ATM.
Yeah.
Make sure that when you do those things, you you kind of close up. You don't want anyone seeing what's happening around you, because if they have your PIN, then, you know, something might happen where they could get your card and, you know, take your money.
Now, Douglas, before, of course, I do let you go now, let's talk about the many PINs that we have to create for so many different things, many different passwords. And I think there is an app that password that has password all in one or something like that. How safe exactly is that? Let me hear from a software developer. How really safe is that, having your passwords all in one basket? And how then should we, you know, we're often being taught, let your password be strong, but then too many different passwords, the brain forgets. I mean, if I have 10 different passwords, I tend to forget this one and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes what people think is easier is to have one password for everything.
Yeah. That is actually unsafe. To have a password manager that, you know, has access to all your passwords. It depends on the type of software that you're using to store your passwords. Some software do have safeguards to make sure that not anyone can just get in to that. They call them vaults because they protect the passwords. Nobody can get into the vaults. But then there are some that you can find online. Some are sketchy. You're already sharing your passwords with other people, and it's very unsafe to do. Yeah. So I would suggest that you stay with the trusted ones, the legitimate softwares for password protection. Anything from Google or Microsoft is trusted. Don't trust any of these new companies that pop out, because a lot of them exist. So just make sure you keep with the trusted ones. Another thing is, again, two-factor authentication, so that even if someone does manage to get into your vault, they can't get into your account without the code that is sent to you.
Interesting. Douglas Shangamanyika, thank you so much for making time for us right here and educating us right here on the Reader News Analysis. I do trust that those for whom the message is intended to actually take it into fact.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, pleasure. And that was Douglas, a software developer. And I think I want to correct myself there. Do take it into factor. I think that's the way it is actually put. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, this is on the Reader News Analysis. But before that, I will be back also to educate you still on this cybersecurity measures. But let's pause here and make room for a scheduled commercial break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere, countrywide.
To... Why pay more when you can pay less at USAFE stores? 4 kilograms real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only $199.99 Namibian dollars. 10 kilograms of Champion Super Maize meal, only $104.99 Namibian dollars. Wellington tomato sauce, just $25.99 Namibian dollars. And pay $194.99 Namibian dollars for 1 liter Bonita Long Life milk. USAFE, where good food costs less.
Team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
As Namibia continues to digitalize public services and economic systems, cybersecurity has evolved from a technical concern into a critical governance issue with far-reaching implications for public trust, service delivery, and financial stability. Now, effective governance depends on secure, reliable, and transparent systems. Government institutions manage vast amounts of sensitive data, including national identity records, health information, financial data, and electoral systems. Now, without strong cybersecurity measures, these systems are vulnerable to cyber attacks and can compromise institutional integrity and weaken public confidence. Cybersecurity protects the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of government systems, ensuring that public services remain accessible, accurate, and trustworthy. Now, when citizens trust that their data is protected, confidence in governance and state institutions is strengthened. And this emphasizes a point that Douglas made, that when data is protected, investors, outside investors, are also confident to invest in a particular country. Cyber threats increasingly target democratic processes through data manipulation, misinformation campaigns, and system disruption. Now, securing digital platforms used for public communication and electoral administration is essential to safeguarding democracy and political stability. Cybersecurity awareness enables public officials and stakeholders to identify threats such as phishing, hacking, and disinformation, enforcing or reinforcing democratic resilience and protecting the credibility of public institutions. Apart from that, cybersecurity measures save government and companies significant financial resources by preventing cyber incidents before they even occur. Hence the saying, prevention is better than cure. Now, cyber attacks often result in direct financial losses, system downtime, costly repairs, legal liabilities, and reputational damage. Now, for government, cyber breaches can disrupt revenue collection, delay payments, interrupt essential services, and require expensive emergency interventions. For businesses, cyber incidents can halt operations, lead to loss of customers, and reduce investor confidence. Investing in preventative cybersecurity measures such as secure networks, regular system updates, staff training, and access controls is far more cost-effective than responding to cyber attacks after damage has been done. So data is a critical asset in both governance and the private sector. Government data underpins policy decisions, service delivery, and national planning, while businesses rely on data for operations, innovation, and preventativeness. So cybersecurity safeguards prevent data from being stolen, from being corrupted, or even permanently lost. Imagine a whole lot worthy of data, but then gets permanently lost. Now, data breaches expose institutions to legal risks and long-term reputational harm, while irreversible data loss can undermine institutional memory and operational continuity. Secure data storage, encryption, regular backups, and controlled access ensure that information remains protected, accurate, and available when needed. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more. Now, of course, our studio line is also open, 083-288-401. Eastern Abay in studio.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bari Hairi, Nola Natu, Hairi Bari, No Hair, Ileco, Berewa, Murahetatu Natu, Bari O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Special admission consideration, undergraduate applicants. UNAM invites eligible Namibian applicants to apply for special admission consideration for selected undergraduate degree programs for the year 2026. Now, this applies to applicants who narrowly missed standard admission requirements but meet the specified point thresholds and subject criteria. Admission under this category is conditional, and students must meet set academic conditions by the end of the year to continue their studies. Special admission does not apply to professional or diploma programs. Details are available from the Office of the Registrar, the University of Namibia. And now for News Beyond the Borders. But before we get to News Beyond the Borders, economic indicators. $1 today is equals to 15.81 Namibian dollars. That is 15 Namibian dollars point 81 cents. And again, the Namibian dollar is growing momentum against the US dollar. €1 is equals to 18 Namibian dollars and 85 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 08 cents. And £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars point 76 cents. While €1 Swiss franc is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 58 cents. €1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. Of course, we pause here now shortly. Be back with News Beyond the Borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda do inawa nune udo otukwetera o special angeta shake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Many young people.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for News Beyond the Borders. Brace yourself for News Beyond the Borders, as we often start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, let's start off in South Africa, where the youth of South Africa are being urged to consider TVET colleges.
Many young people leave school believing that university is the only path to employment. But this is a belief the artisan and owner of the kitchen wrap company disagrees with, as TVET colleges offer skills that can lead directly to employment or self-employment.
I have a strong engineering background, so I'm an engineer by profession, and unfortunately I lost my job in 2021, and this led me to thinking outside of the box, thinking what can I do to create employment for myself. And when I stumbled upon this opportunity, I thought it's a lucrative business idea. And when I started it, people loved it, and I was able to grow it to what it is today. Right now, I employ 7 people full-time, and it's been 4 years. This is the 5th year.
While running her business, Mabaso also trains others in artisan skills, among them Sibusiso Mbogazi, who lost his job last year after 14 years of employment. He now hopes to either work for himself or re-enter the job market, as there is a shortage of skilled artisans in South Africa.
Kids, they need to start looking on other options. University is not the only option. And besides, there's so many people who just passed not long ago. We had so many people who passed their matric. So universities might not be the only option that is there. There are FET colleges. There are trainings like these, skills that you can develop and start your own business. So I don't think university is the only option. Yes, it's the best option, but there are many others that you can able to show up your skills and make yourself some money.
A mechanical engineering student at Ekurhuleni TVET College, Bandi Lentsele, says TVET colleges offer something universities do not, hands-on experience.
I think college is the best because at college you are able to do practicals. They also offer you learnerships, like after doing your course, you get learnerships where you'll learn more about the course itself while working and earning a salary. So that's why I think colleges are the best rather than universities.
A leading expert in technical and vocational education and skills development says the stigma surrounding TVET colleges remains a major challenge and calls for better public awareness of the practical opportunities these institutions offer.
My recommendation to young people and parents is always to opt for a qualification that's broader and not linked to one very specific job or very, very specific narrow skill. Like an engineering qualification, we've got good engineering programs in our TVET colleges, and you know that can prepare people for a range of different types of jobs. We have good artisan programs, and artisan skills are in quite high demand relative to many kind of more junior or entry-level office skills.
The Higher Education Department has urged young people to explore alternative pathways, as a bachelor's pass does not guarantee university entry. It says TVET colleges are being strengthened with modernized and industry-aligned curricula. Musa Mhlongo, SABC News, Johannesburg.
The Eastern Cape Agriculture has reaffirmed the province's commitment to reviewing over 10,000 hectares.
The revitalization irrigation schemes is seen as a tool to eradicate poverty and create economic opportunities in the Eastern Cape. The initiative, worth nearly 20 million rand, aims to support vegetable, grain, and fodder production and provide machinery to farmers. The goal is to ensure food security through a partnership between government, the private sector, and local communities.
At the back of everything is to fight poverty in the province of the Eastern Cape. Secondly, we've taken a decision as the provincial government to revive the irrigation schemes in the province. And this is one of them. But in total, we are going to revive 10,000 hectares of irrigation schemes across the province in different district municipalities. We want to fight poverty, we want to create job opportunities, and also introduce new skills of working the land. So that is why we are here today. We want to also boost the economy of the province.
The initiative has created job opportunities for the young and old in this community.
Due to low employment rate, I started farming in 2021, and since then I have grew from 1 hectare to 10 hectares, and I have managed to employ about 25 people on the farm.
Residents, particularly those from rural communities, couldn't be more happier with this initiative.
These projects are of great help to us because I was able to buy Christmas clothes for my children. Then in January, I was able to buy a uniform. I am very grateful.
He says his situation was bad before he started working on this project. He says now he is happy and is able to put food on the table and improve his living conditions. The project will now be rolled out in other districts in the province. Abungile Yangis, SABC News, Zanyokwe Village in Middle Rift.
Meanwhile, an extradition of a Chinese national is underway at the Otambo International Airport.
Just another quick update on the story that Calvin Ludla is covering at the OR Tambo International Airport. You heard him speak to police spokesperson Atlenda Mate in the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and she was explaining the process that will unfold. So it seems as though the court proceeding has already been done. They are now moving, as they indicated, Leanne, that he will then be handed over to Chinese officials and be extradited.
Yeah, it's quite a, this is not something that you get to see what happens behind the scenes when somebody is extradited. And they obviously are giving us full access there. You can see the media following, watching, seeing how this process works. And we even a bit earlier saw this this gentleman crying, obviously knowing his fate as soon as he gets onto that flight back to China, and then, of course, faces, I imagine, a lot of jail time. And this is on the back of defrauding, I think, to the tune of about 120 million.
That's correct. Yeah, that's what Atlenda Mate said. And this was in some Forex, dealings that he allegedly participated in that ended up in a scheme that defrauded the Chinese government of 120 million rand, something to that effect, as was explained to us. So these are live visuals from the OR Tambo International Airport, where he is being extradited, and he will be handed over, of course, to the Chinese officials.
All right, so that's where we are. Of course, Kelvin will keep us updated and keep these visuals rolling for us. But while this, I suppose, happens, we're not too sure at this point if he is alone and or if there is anybody that is going with him. But certainly now at the moment, we're only seeing him. So he is the one that we're sort of focusing our attention on and seeing how this process works behind the scenes. It's quite sort of interesting to see how these guys arrive and what they've done in the country. And when two countries have got this extradition treaty in place, this is what happens, that, one country is able to do it. So there we go. We can see now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of going into the departures and into immigration as they go through. And that's that place. It's quite fascinating, I imagine. All of the travelers are also watching this taking place as the police and Interpol and all of these guys are sort of walking there and accompanying it, everyone wondering what is going on.
Yeah, border management authorities and, as you said, Interpol. And we see what we assume to be some Chinese nationals there. And I suppose all to do with the handover that will ultimately take place during this extradition. But you're right, Leanne, we hardly ever see the behind the scenes when extraditions take place. So this is giving us a glimpse into what happens there.
Goodness me. All right. So definitely, I mean, I can see that they are going through immigration and I can see our cameras are now not going through. I mean, that's an area I don't imagine we're going to go through to, but you never know. Kelvin may be able to get through, but we'll watch from here and keep you posted.
You know what? The curiosity is getting the better of me because right.
This Chinese official are being extradited for defrauding the Chinese government. Let's hear a little bit more.
Now, a Chinese national is set to be extradited for defrauding the Chinese government of about 120 million rand. Our SABC News reporter Calvin Dudler is there. So let's locate Calvin and, of course, where he is and find out what exactly is unfolding. Calvin, good morning. If you can hear me, as we can see on our screen right now, we've got your visuals of a Chinese national whom we understand he is being extradited. So these were the visuals that we showed you a short while ago. But Calvin, please speak to us. Where are you? What is happening?
A Chinese national is being extradited, is being sent home. What we saw today is that there are officials from the Interpol and the members of the South African Police Service here at the OR Tambo International. Also, we saw a delegation from China, Sakina, and we had a rare opportunity to also see this 57-year-old male, a Chinese national, coming inside here. I can tell you that he was crying. He didn't want to even look at what was happening because he was being accompanied by police. There was a heavy police presence, but Brigadier Atlenda Mate from the South African Police Service is here to explain more on what is happening here. Brigadier, thank you very much. We saw a 15-year-old Chinese national. He's inside here being processed. You can tell our viewers at home what is really taking place inside here.
Okay. So, very good morning and thank you for the opportunity. We do have a 63-year-old fugitive of justice who fled to South Africa in 2021. According to the Chinese government, he defrauded them of 120 million rand in which he was running an illegal foreign currency exchange business in that particular country. So he defrauded in that particular business because he wasn't paying taxes. He wasn't registered with the regulatory authorities in that country. He defrauded the Chinese government 120 million rand. So he was placed on a red notice, which is a request to law enforcement agencies across the world to assist a particular country to locate and arrest and then surrender that particular fugitive of justice to them. So last year, in July 2025, he was attempting to apply for a U.S. visa. We were then alerted by the embassy on what he was attempting to do, and we arrested him there and there. He's been in police custody for the past 6 months. We received an extradition order from the Minister of Justice on the 20th of January. We then communicated with authorities in China, and I can confirm that 3 days ago, the delegation that you would have seen earlier arrived in the country. We held a meeting with them. They not only alerted us on this particular fugitive, but they also alerted us on 18 others that we have been looking for, actively searching for. 11 are on red notices, and we are still actively searching. So that particular meeting's was to actually provide a progress report on how far Interpol SA is in finding those particular fugitives. So we can confirm that the charge is a fraud for Fujiwa Chen, and what is taking place behind us actually is the extradition process, the handing over of these particular fugitives to the Chinese delegation. So there's a lot of paperwork. There will be searching of the suspect, what he has in his possession, ensuring that he's free from injuries and so on. We will then hand over the paperwork to the Chinese delegation, escort them to the terminals, and they will then head to China. And on arrival in China, he will then be formally arrested by law enforcement agencies in that country. He will be taken to a local prison where he will await the trial, his trial, where he will stand trial for fraud, money laundering charges in that particular country for defrauding the government of 120 million rand.
Before I wrap, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about what was mentioned by the police minister yesterday on those who are in, have been mentioned on the Madlanga Commission. The minister is saying that he did communicate with your principal about the suspension of those who are involved. What would you say on that?
Well, I cannot comment on that first because I'm yet to get a briefing, but I know that the minister and the national commissioner are still going to have a meeting on what the president has pronounced and given directive that those that are implicated should be investigated and be placed on suspension. But what I can tell you is that the national commissioner was proactive in his actions. Last year already, on the 11th of November, he appointed a five-member team, toss team, if you can call it, to look into all those individuals whose names are being mentioned at the Madlanga Commission. So that team is already in place. It has been doing quite some work. We already have two members, senior officers, that have already been suspended. Actually 17 have been issued with notices for investigation. So there has been a lot of work that has been running parallel with the Madlanga Commission as well as the ad hoc committee. So I think the National Commissioner was very proactive in that the work already started last year on the 11th of November, and this five-member task team, if you can put it, has already provided their first report on the 26th of November to the National Commissioner. But with what the President has directed, the Minister and the National Commissioner will meet to say, do we then appoint another team, or does that five-member team then continue with the work that they've been doing? But I can assure you, we can assure South Africans that there is work that has been done and running parallel with both the Commission and the ad hoc committee.
Thank you very much. That was Brigadier Adlenda Mate. She speaks for South African Police Service nationally, confirming that a 63-year-old Chinese national has been detained.
Now, the criminal law of the People's Republic of China features a strict penal system focused on deterring crime through severe punishments, including death, life imprisonment, and forced labor, with a historically rooted emphasis on punitive justice. Now, common penalties for offenders include fixed-term imprisonment, detention, or suspended death. Now, key aspects of punishment for offenders in China include capital punishment and suspended death. China retains the death penalty, often applied to violent crimes, drug trafficking, and major economic crimes. A unique feature is the death sentence with a 2-year suspension, which is often commuted to life imprisonment if the offender does not commit further intentional crimes during 2-year probation. Life imprisonment and forced labor. This is, life sentences are imposed for serious crimes and typically involve mandatory forced labor in prison, often accompanied by lifelong deprivation of political rights. And there is the fixed-term imprisonment and detention, which offenders can receive fixed-term imprisonment, usually 6 months to 15 years, or up to 20 to 25 years for combined sentences, or short-term custody for less serious offenses. Also, the public security punishment for minor offenses not deemed criminal enough for full criminal law. Police can impose administrative punishment such as fines, warning, or administrative detention. So for this 36-year-old who is being extradited as Chinese national, is for he's being extradited for defrauding the Chinese government of about 120 million rand. And you know, the South African rand is on par or equal to the Namibian dollar. So that's 120 Namibian dollars. And of course, he was crying. And that could be also because he knows that his country does not play when it comes to executing punishment to offenders. But oh well, crime does not pay indeed. But their punishment is quite harsh, but maybe that's a topic for another day, a conversation for another time. Now, Zambia, on the other hand, has called for increased intra-African trade. Let's take a listen.
President Hakainde Hichilema has engaged diplomats from Europe, Africa, Middle East, and Asia, reaffirming Zambia's commitment to strengthening bilateral and multilateral cooperation. Speaking during the annual presidential meet and greet ceremony with the diplomatic corps in Lusaka, the president says Zambia remains open for partnerships that promotes trade, investments and sustainable development. President Hichilema says government is prioritizing diplomatic engagements as a key tool for attracting investments, promoting regional stability and repositioning Zambia on the global stage. The president also disclosed that Zambia has made significant progress in restoring economic stability and rebuilding investor confidence after officially concluding its 38-month IMF Extended Credit Facility program.
We in this country made it very clear that this was not an IMF program on Zambia. It was a Zambia program with the IMF. The two are fundamentally different, and we never got excuses to say we haven't done this to the people of Zambia because of the IMF. No, 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 no. This is our Zambia restructuring program with the support of the IMF. And I think it's a different sort of mind frame or mindset from blaming an institution that we own, because we are part owners of the IMF. And we ask the IMF to work with us on a framework, of course, negotiating a number of issues with them that fitted our reform agenda. And you saw a lot of reforms in the energy sector. You saw a lot of reforms that allowed us to bring in a diversified energy mix following the West drought in 2024, thereabout. These reforms are our reforms. But we're happy that we had the support of our institution called the IMF. And so we're very pleased with this situation. But returning to the theme, we want to utilize this environment now to do more with yourselves, as we do more with ourselves inside Zambia and the region and the continent.
President Hichilema says Zambia's economy grew by an estimated 5.8% in 2025, with a projection of over 6% growth in 2026, driven mainly by reforms in the mining, energy and agriculture sector.
We want to utilize this environment now to do more with yourselves, as we do more with ourselves inside Zambia and the region and the continent. I must also indicate that we are looking forward, as a result of this myriad of reforms, to more growth, more economic growth, GDP growth in 2026, anchored on over 5.8% around in 2025. Numbers are still coming through. I'm not happy that we are slow in working out our numbers. With today's technology, we should be able to get our numbers much, much, much faster. We are towards the end of January, so we have an area to work on here to get our numbers out very quickly, because numbers are important to allow us to do the planning in the next year. So, but we're looking at 5.8% GDP growth, but in 2026, we are looking at well over 6% GDP growth. And if you see where we're coming from a minus 2.8% GDP growth as we were taking public office to where we are now, tremendous effort and progress has been made. But we are the first ones to say we could have done more. We can do more. And we want to push to do more in 2026.
The president also dismissed claims that mining companies are not contributing to national revenue.
There's a fallacy in this country that mining companies are not paying taxes. It's not correct. The largest single taxpayer in this country is one mine called First Quantum. Is the largest single taxpayer. And we as Zambian people are partners in that mine. But yet on the other side, there's an argument that mines are not paying taxes. Since we took office, that mine alone has increased its tax payments to the Treasury, supporting our free education policies, supporting our social spending programs, right? Social cash transfer, cash for work, supporting health, supporting other key sectors.
On peace and security, President Hichilema says Zambia remains committed to regional peace and stability, especially in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, Mozambique, and Sudan. On the upcoming elections in Zambia, President Hichilema has reaffirmed his government's commitment to upholding Zambia's tradition of peaceful, credible, and democratic elections.
I know there is anxiety, but I want to assure you that in 2026, there will be credible, peaceful, and transparent elections. There will be credible, peaceful, and transparent elections. I'm sure you are following what's happening in by-elections. Who wins does not matter. But the process allows the opposition to win, allows the ruling party to win. There's an election in Kasama today. Whoever wins, democracy wins.
Meanwhile, Acting Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation Minister Rodney Sikomba reaffirmed Zambia's commitment to re-engaging with the international community.
Zambia, ladies and gentlemen, has placed strong emphasis on re-engagement with the international community. This policy is anchored on our desire to build trust, attract investment, expand trade, and create opportunities that will improve the lives of the Zambian people.
Dean of the Diplomatic Corps and Ambassador of Somalia to Zambia, Hawa Hassan Muhammad, praised Zambia's political stability and economic reforms.
Zambia has maintained a proud record of 10 peaceful and credible elections, each marked by smooth and transition of power. He also noted that Zambia's capacity to resolve electoral differences through dialogue and compromise is no accident.
The annual presidential meet and greet ceremony serves as a platform for strengthening diplomatic relations and reaffirming Zambia's position as a stable and reliable partner in global affairs.
Meanwhile, the government has unveiled digitalization drive for public service.
The government has launched a major digital push to modernize the public service, placing technology at the center of service delivery and decision-making. Speaking at the first public service management meeting of 2026, Secretary to the Cabinet, Patrick Kangwa, says the reforms are meant to close the gap between government and citizens.
As mandated by our legal framework, ministers will vacate their offices approximately 90 days before the forthcoming general elections. You will therefore be expected during the period to work harder and ensure that there will be no gap in service delivery to the people.
Mr. Kangwa has disclosed that senior managers will now be judged on how fast they turn policy into results, warning that delays and excuses will no longer be tolerated. He notes that the reforms mark a shift towards a results-driven public service where performance, not position, determines success.
Permanent secretaries, this means measuring your performance against targets and drafting your contracts for 2026. These documents are not mere formalities, as they form the foundation of accountability and the framework through which we deliver on our mandate to the people of Zambia. You will all recall that last year, a number of permanent secretaries, directors, and assistant directors were not able to complete their performance contracts on time. A number of PSs were warned, directors were warned, assistant directors were warned. That was 2025. 2026, there will be no warning. I will suspend and suspend and suspend.
The Secretary to the Cabinet also issued a strong warning to civil servants with political ambitions.
Those of you who have political intentions are guided to resign immediately from the civil service. Do not tempt us into implementing the necessary regulations and guidelines we have. I will not hesitate to remove any public service worker taking part in politics.
Meanwhile, government has launched provincial service charters, setting clear standards of how public institutions must serve citizens. The charters will act as a performance contract between government and the public, spelling out what services people should expect and how quickly they should receive them. Daisy Mulenga, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Meanwhile, analysts are warning that sub-Saharan debt stability masks underlying risks.
Hours ago, I spoke to Mark Boland. He's a senior credit research analyst at Red Intelligence. In 2025, the International Monetary Fund argued that debt levels have pretty much stabilized across most of the economies in sub-Saharan Africa, with a median interest-to-revenue ratio at around 12%. But, as Mark points out, that relative stability doesn't mean that there's no more cause for concern.
Yeah, thank you, Rama. Yeah, I think, in my opinion, it's an expected stabilization. You have a bit of normalization there. I think Ghana, Zambia were always the ones that looked the most exposed. And as you know, Ethiopia had issues with servicing their Chinese debt going back well before COVID. And our view has always been that there's going to be more of a drip feed rather than a kind of building stream of defaults. And that's what I think we're going to see in coming years, maybe a default every other year. And then, but I think it's, even though things have stabilized, a lot of these countries, Kenya, Uganda, have considerably higher interest revenue ratios than that 12% average. And they're only one negative shock away from, you know, being in a position where they can refinance their debts. So I think it's far from a particularly reassuring situation.
There have been efforts to set up the African Credit Ratings Agency. I believe they'll be talking about it when the African Union Heads of State Summit takes place in February. Assuming such a body was set up, would it actually make a material difference, though, to how investors and fund managers do assess African sovereigns? You know, put it another way, what would this African CRA do that's different from Fitch, Moody's and S&P?
Yeah, so my understanding is that the decision has more or less been taken. It just has perhaps to go through a few formal hoops, and it's going to be located in the Mauritius, as far as I understand. But it's yet to be budgeted funds for this. But my assumption is that it's definitely going to take place. I met some of these officials from these new African, new African rating agencies down in Joburg, and they are definitely expanding their operations, taking on more. But I do think it's a difficult task. I think, you know, these established rating agencies have been around for decades, I think more than 100 years for some of them. And in order for a rating agency to actually be, efficient, have an impact, you need a track record and you need a credibility. And I think it's very much an uphill struggle against the three incumbents.
And I want to just illustrate, you know, the sort of tensions that we have here between the big three and some of the institutions on the continent. Fitch and Afreximbank have certainly been in the spotlight over that. Afreximbank has been claiming that it has preferred creditor status akin to the IMF and the World Bank. And Fitch says that, and this actually came out yesterday, they say that the fact that Afreximbank ended up with an agreement with Ghana that is in line with comparability of treatment principles implies that Afreximbank didn't actually benefit from preferred creditor status. In other words, they actually took a haircut on that $750 million loan. What do you make of this row between these two agencies?
Well, I think Afreximbank's position, as far as I understand, is that they claim they have these legal agreements, these agreements of some sort with these member countries where it's stated that they are a preferred credit status, but actually how this preferred credit status works is that you need to have that established by other large creditors. And that's, I think, for a Afrexim Bank, that in case of Ghana and also Zambia, and well, Tunisia is a case that looked like it were likely default, but actually didn't. They came in when essentially no one else would lend to these countries, and lent at quite elevated interest rates, around 10%. I mean, Afrexim Bank, you know, does say that they do have a higher funding cost than some of these other multilateral development costs. So they need to lend at higher rates. But I think it's very hard to come in late in the process and lend at very high rates and then claim that you want your preferred creditor rated status. I mean, if you could do that, then it would be a very lucrative business, but that's not the case. So I think they're a very weak position from the start. And I think it shouldn't really be a surprise now that, you know, the rating agents are pushing back at that more forcefully. Arguably, maybe they should have done this earlier. And for Afrexim Bank, I think it's kind of shooting themselves in the foot by withdrawing this Fitch rating, because now they only have one credit rating and with a three major ratings outstanding, and that will make it harder for them to borrow in the international financial markets to finance their operations.
And on top of that, Afrexim Bank really didn't help themselves with the lack of concrete detail, right, that was on offer in the Ghana situation, because the statement that they put out last year simply said, we have arrived at a solution, but it didn't exactly say what the solution was. Was there a haircut? Was there a maturity extension? It was very, very thin on detail.
Yes, you could argue that would have helped, but I think it's quite clear that they were going to have to restructure under the terms of the other commercial and bilateral creditors. So it's, you know, transparency is good if the data is in your favor, but I think in this case, it was always clear that the terms they would have to accept the same terms as the bilateral and commercial creditors rather than the multilateral creditors. So maybe they didn't have much option there, but I think it was a bit of a lost cause already from the beginning for them, unfortunately.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onko Nana Dengi program brought to you by Loisa Shimi. And from Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow at 1900 hours to 2100 hours right here on Eagle FM for life lessons. Goodbye.